like an animal, talks like an animal, must be an animal. Come hear the animals, talking animals, talking animals. Talks like an animal, must be an animal. Come hear the animals, talking animals, talking animals.
Good morning. This is Talking Animals. I'm Duncan Strauss. My guest today is Indra Lahiri, founder of the Indra Loka Animal Sanctuary, located in Mahoponey, Pennsylvania, one of the few farm animal and all species sanctuaries in the country. Launched in 2005 and now housing some 200 animals, Indra Loka has evolved in significant ways and now pursues a multifaceted mission, not just in the array of animals it provides sanctuary for, but also in the educational programs it offers for children, among other distinctions. We'll learn more about Indra Loka Animal Sanctuary, including how it evolved into its singular status, when we speak with Indra Lahiri in a few moments here on Talking Animals. Also later in the show is the prize for Name That Animal Tune. I'll be offering a copy of the acclaimed documentary Cowspiracy. In addition, later in the program, in the Comedy Corner, we'll hear a piece of animal comedy from a comedian never before featured in the Comedy Corner. Also today, August 5th, is my mom's birthday. She's been gone many years now, but she was a huge, huge animal lover. And I think I mentioned before, if you learned compassion from Dorothy Strauss, you'll learn from the best. Without her influence, then, there's no way Talking Animals exists. So happy birthday, Mom, and thank you. Before I talk with Indra Lahiri, let's hear an animal song, one geared for discussing farm animals with her, and a classic to boots. This is Les Paul with Chicken Reel on Talking Animals. This is the late, great Les Paul with Chicken Reel. Speaking of chickens, let's discuss Indra Loka Animal Sanctuary right now. With a reminder that I invite you to join the conversation by calling 813-239-9663, emailing us at dj@wmnf.org, or texting 813-433-0885. Let's welcome Indra Lahiri to Talk Animals. Good morning, Indra.
Duncan, thanks so much for having me on your show.
Absolutely. Thanks for joining us this morning on Talking Animals. And as a prelude to discussing various aspects of the sanctuary story, let's first discuss various aspects of your story. So where did you grow up and what sort of role did animals play in your childhood?
Actually, I was born and raised in Rochester, New York. I was the first child in my family who was actually born in the United States. My father's from India and my mother's from the Netherlands. And my older brother was born in Switzerland, where they lived before they came here. And I have just always loved animals. They have more you know, it's probably easier to say that they've always just taken care of me. From the time I was a young child, we had a dog named Panda that actually sort of acted as a nanny for me. You know, she would take care of me and alert my mother if I needed my diaper changed or if I needed food, to the extent that I never cried, according to my mother, until I was 5 years old, because the dog would get my needs met before, get my mother to get my needs met before I had to cry.
And so I guess that begs the question, did you make up for lost time once you were five? Did you cry extra for all the time you had missed earlier?
Think so.
Okay. In addition to Panda, were there other animals in the household, at least as you advanced into your formative years?
Yeah, as we got older, we had a number of dogs, and we also had parakeets, and my parents were very supportive, Duncan, so that literally I would just, you know, I love to go out and walk in the woods, and I often found animals, whether they be cats or dogs or, you know, injured squirrels or bunnies or birds, and I would just bring them home. And, you know, if they were domestic animals like cats, dogs, or ferrets, then my parents would allow me to help find them, you know, either their original families or a good home if they had none. And for wild animals, my parents would help me to actually get them rehabilitated and release them. So literally, you know, from the time I could walk, I was... I was finding animals and bringing them home with me.
You sound definitely like the classic storyline of the one in the neighborhood, the area, whatever it might be, that's tending to the sick or injured animals that are anywhere in the near vicinity. So it really does seem like a rescue of one kind or another has been a through line of your story.
It has. And I think what's important to emphasize here is that, and I believe this is true for all people, human people who do animal rescue, is that the animals do as much or more for us than we do for them, truly. It's a two-way street.
Well, that's a lesson that Panda taught you, I believe.
That is true.
Yeah.
And every other one since.
So what else did rescue teach you as you moved from childhood into adulthood? And, well, you're still in adulthood, but I'm just saying over the years, what were there lessons that you became more aware of as time advanced about rescue and what the animals were teaching besides that they would look after you as much as you would look after them?
That's a really terrific question, Duncan. There's a world of lessons that I've learned from the animals, and I continue to learn them every day. Truly, I tell people I must be, you know, the person most in need of teachers, because I live here at the sanctuary with 200 teachers who teach me about the importance of things in life every day. So, you know, things like being present in the moment, you know, enjoying what you have, letting go of the past, not identifying with pain. You know, so often humans, when they go through a terrible experience, it becomes part of their identity. And, I mean, these animals here, they've been through some of the most horrific experiences that anyone could ever imagine, and they don't hold on to that at all. It doesn't mean that they don't remember it at all. Sometimes you see something in their face, you know, where it's clear that a memory has flickered past, and yet that's not who they are. They you know, they live these full, joyous lives and just move forward in the moment.
Yeah.
So many lessons, too, about gentleness. You know, a good example is Penny, a cow that we had for a lot of years. She passed away in January, and she was just so loving and compassionate. She had come to us from having been a breeding cow on a beef farm and had been forcibly impregnated every year. And in this particular farm, the farmer didn't believe that transport of animals was a good thing. And so he would actually kill the babies in the adjoining pasture to the mothers before sending them off to be processed as meat. Penny saw her babies killed every year. And when she got here, you know, she immediately forgave us humans for what she had done and started taking care of all of us, you know, whether we be humans or other animals on the farm. She would, if we had an injured animal come in or a sick animal come in, she'd be right there, you know, laying down with them, cuddling them, taking care of them. Just incredible. And
yeah.
Actually, just at the very end of her life, we brought a starving calf home who was literally just on the brink of death. He was nothing but skin and bones.
Mm.
And when she saw him, she had been here for 7 years at this point, so she had not, you know, had babies in all of those years that she was here at the sanctuary.
Yeah.
When Penny saw Mookie, the little starving calf, she actually started lactating.
Oh, wow.
And nursing him.
Wow.
So, you know, talk about compassion.
Yeah,
talk about, you know, giving of yourself. I mean, it was just incredible. And actually, there's a video that shows the whole thing online. It was really powerful.
Yeah, boy, it's hard to get more powerful than a cow that's sort of just been hanging out and you know, healing, obviously, from her own very tough travails that, again, is not pregnant and sees a calf in need and starts lactating, you know, sort of spontaneously. Wow.
Yeah.
So in a way, it's my own fault, but we sort of skipped over, I guess, a key part of the story, which is you're this girl who always looking after animals that are sick or injured around the neighborhood, interested in rescue, and that, as we've established, has become a through line. But how did we go from there to deciding, you know what, I'm going to take my expertise and passion and experience and start a sanctuary? I mean, that's still kind of a big leap, I think, by any measure.
Yeah, a big leap, and it was kind of a crazy one, to be honest with you, at the time. I didn't go into it as thoughtfully as I should have, so I've learned a lot over the years. I loved animals, as I mentioned to you, and as soon as I was old enough, I started volunteering with various rescue groups. They were mostly companion animal rescue groups, so, you know, dogs, cats, horses. And I was seeing, Duncan, that certain animals were constantly being adopted out and then sent back, either because they had behavioral issues or because they had medical health issues that the families just couldn't handle. And every time they'd come back, they'd be in worse shape than when they left. And so, or, you know, in some of the rescue groups, animals like that were being euthanized when I knew they could live full lives if they had the right environment and the right, you know, the right people to care for them. So I started taking these sort of, you know, quote-unquote unadoptable animals home. And I had a number of horses and dogs and cats. When I was involved with a horse rescue of a large horse farm where there was one pig, and I ended up taking the pig home with me. So I thought, Duncan, what I would do is, you know, I had to learn about how to take care of pigs, right?
Sure.
So I thought I would do it the same way that I learned how to take care of horses, which was that I contacted veterinarians that specialized in that species, and I asked them if I could travel with them a little bit and learn from them. And then I visited various farms, you know, that were kind of well-considered in the community to see if I could learn from them about how they take care of their pigs. And Duncan, I was floored. I was shocked. This was probably about 15 years ago, and I had no idea how farm animals were being raised or being treated. I knew nothing about factory farms. I was horrified to see what people considered an okay way. I mean, they actually wanted to teach me, this is what you do. You want to get into pigs, this is what you do. You put them in this cage and you fatten them up, and then, meanwhile, I had fallen in love with Pigmont, this pig, and he was so precious to me, and I saw how deeply he felt and how much he thought and how much he was like me. And I just couldn't bear it. So I changed my focus entirely and started focusing on farm animals.
Let me just back up a sec. So when you were first trying to learn about the pigs to look after the one that you had decided to rescue, and you were hearing things about the way they were raising pigs, this wasn't specifically factory farming only. This was also other people just with farms that were raising pigs, or was it both?
I'm referring primarily to factory farms was taken to, but
okay.
Yes, I did go also and meet people who had sort of backyard pigs. But again, you know, nobody seemed to be raising pigs for any purpose but to eat them, and nobody seemed to be treating them as the thoughtful, feeling beings that I could see that they were. And, you know, I was heartbroken.
Yeah. It sounds like that was sort of a pivotal moment in how you wanted to proceed and how the sanctuary kind of developed.
Yeah, yeah. So at that point, you know, I started rescuing farm animals. I was still taking in companion animals as well. And then in 2005, I founded Indraloka Animal Sanctuary as a safe haven for all species, but specific focus on farm animals that had who were in situations where they had literally nowhere else to turn. For example, a lot of our animals come from humane police that have to close down farms for cruelty. And I don't have to tell you that it has to be pretty cruel for it to actually be illegal enough for a humane police officer to be able to take an animal away.
Wow.
But so that's just one example. Hoarding situations is another example of places that the animals here at Indraloka come from.
So a couple quick things about Interlocal. One is that we should just clarify, as the website and other information about the sanctuary takes sort of, you know, some pains to do, is it's not really named after you. Maybe you could explain kind of the actual name and what it reflects of the sanctuary.
So I, as I shared with you, my father was Indian and I was raised Hindu. So I often heard the word Indraloka as a, you know, it's a Sanskrit word that is the name of the heaven for the gods. And of course I was taken with it, both because of the concept of a heaven for gods and also because, you know, it sounded like my name. So as a young child, that's fascinating, right?
Sure.
And I was also, you know, as raised as a Hindu, raised with the understanding that all life is sacred. You know, whether it be a worm or a tick or a bee or a bug or a pig or a goat or a chicken or a dog or a man or a bear or anybody else,
yeah,
all life is sacred, or a plant or a tree. So I, you know, was so taken with this idea that when I founded the sanctuary, I wanted to create a heaven on earth for beings who had not been treated as the sacred beings that they were. And, you know, we strive every day to literally just make this heaven for them.
Cool. Well, this is Talking Animals. If you just tuned in, my guest is Indra Lahiri, founder of Indraloka Animal Sanctuary, one of the few farm and still, I guess, all a variety of other species too, right, Indra, you would say that even though there's a farm animal focus, there's still other species that live there,
yeah,
right?
Absolutely.
Yeah, and I guess there's some 200 animals there. So if you'd like to ask Indra a question or offer a comment, please call 813-239-9663, email dj@wmnf.org, or text 813-433-0885. And so we've already gotten a few emails and texts. One, I think we'll just deal with right now because it says, I don't think that cows are capable of forgiveness. Sorry, but that's BS. And they didn't say BS. I mean, that's mm-hmm. just an interesting comment. And I guess we all sort of have our own view and you were there and saw the situation. And, you know, I certainly think at the very least, one of the things that anybody that spent any time with animals can see, even if it's just companion animals that are in your living room or backyard or whatever, is how incredibly resilient they are. And I think that goes certainly across species. And
sure. And I agree with you, Duncan, that, you know, everybody's entitled to their own perspective, of course, and
sure,
I respect that. I don't know how many people have spent as much time with these animals as I have.
Yeah.
I have literally, for 5 years of running the sanctuary, I was alone with these animals, totally alone. I did not have, you know, I worked from home. I did not have people coming through. I spent all of my time with them. And still today, I spend most of my time with these animals. I think other people who spend time with farm animals are doing it in a production, quote-unquote, system where they're raising them for a purpose. I know, because I've seen animals in those settings and in sanctuary settings, that they behave differently in a farming setting versus a sanctuary setting. So in my experience, in my, you know, significant experience of spending time with them, I have seen them think and feel and have emotions and show forgiveness and communicate. And there's research now actually coming out that I'm sure you've read a lot about that's backing all of that up.
Even just in the, I think, most fundamental anecdotal sense, if you go and adopt a dog at the shelter this weekend, I think most people would say that X amount of days or at the most weeks later, that dog reflects some sort of healing, appreciation, gratitude. Now, again, some of that is projecting and anthropomorphizing, I suppose. But, I mean, you can see it very simply just there. So, to me, it would just seem all the more magnified, especially if a farm animal has been through some sort of hellish cruelty or hoarding or other kind of experience, which is how they end up at Indraloka. So, anyway, all right, well, let's not belabor that. There's some callers and emailers and other people who want to get involved in the conversation. Hi, you're on Talking Animals with Indra Lahiri.
Yeah, hi, good morning. I was just wondering, how many different farm animals has your guest had sex with? Thank you.
Okay. Very sorry about that. And as I told you over the weekend, don't screen the calls. Needless to say, or that would not caller would not be have place on there. I'm very, very sorry. Let's hope for a little bit better and more respectful call. You're on Talking Animals, Indra Lahiri.
Hello, is this me?
Yeah, sure. Go ahead, please.
Well, I'm sorry, but this woman is chasing something because she says she respects everything, whether it's a tick or a flea. And I would submit to you that if she's being inspected by any organization and her animals that she's harboring are full of ticks and fleas, that they're going to put a stop to that. That's absurd that everything has a right to live on everything else as a hoax. Let her answer that.
Okay. Well, Indra, if you feel like answering, feel free. And otherwise, we're going to sort of pursue a different line of questioning, I can assure you.
Absolutely. And again, you know, I welcome and respect your right to your opinion. What we do here at Interloca is we use a variety of holistic treatments and herbs and things like that so that we don't get infestations of fleas and ticks. And I've been grateful that we have never had an experience like that before. But my belief, my deep belief is still the same, that all life is sacred and all life is to be respected. I think that we need to live in balance with one another. I think everybody's here for a reason, and that includes you.
Very cool. Well, here's something nice that just has rolled in. It says, what an uplifting, wonderful interview. What an extraordinary person, Indra. Thank you. And that's from Melanie Sue Bowles, who's the founder and director of Proud Spirit Horse Sanctuary. So sort of kindred spirit, recognizing good work and the challenges that go with that. So,
thanks for the kind words.
So here's a question that I don't think is really doesn't lend itself to a quick, easy answer, but maybe there's just a quick broad stroke or step one question answer you might have to this. One of our texters has said, how would you start a sanctuary on 60 acres north of Tallahassee? Well, that will be first step one or two, because that is itself a several hour or several day conversation. Okay. But what, just to set that person maybe down the initial path, what would you recommend they do first?
There's a longer answer to that question that you can find on YouTube from my presentation at last year's International Animal Rights Conference, where I talked about building and sustaining the sanctuary of your dreams. So you can certainly go on there and check that out. But what I would say is that I would think long and hard before starting a sanctuary, because it's serious work and it's going to require everything that you have, all of your time, all of your money, all of your love, all of your patience, every resource that you have for the rest of your life. So I would think long and hard. I'm not saying don't do it, but I'm saying be sure that you're committed, because those animals are going to be counting on you, and it's not something that you can walk away from a few years later. That's number one.
Okay.
The other thing that I would say is certainly go and visit other sanctuaries and get yourself a job at another sanctuary or volunteer at another sanctuary for several years, at least, before you even consider doing that.
Over the years, I've spoken to many people who found themselves through circumstances or a confluence of circumstances running a sanctuary or starting one, that the momentum was such that they just, of course, were required to keep going. And it sounds like, in a way, from what you alluded to, that you were slightly surprised initially to find yourself down that path, but it was just, I guess, born of the passion for the animals and the long history of rescue. Is that kind of how you...
Right, yeah. And the mistake that I made, Duncan, is that I didn't think about it from the perspective of a business. I had, you know, my own small business doing consulting work for corporations, and I was just going to use that to fund it. I had no idea how expensive it is to rescue farm animals, and I had no idea how much work is involved with it. It's, you know, these animals are not, they're bred to die young. So when you keep them a long time, they require a lot of care, because they grow very large and they have all kinds of health issues. And it's very important that we're careful and take, you know, good quality care of them and give them good quality of life. We don't just want to have them, you know, warehoused here.
Yeah.
We want to have them be happy and enjoy life here.
Right.
So, I didn't think about that until I was, you know, already involved in it and realized how hard it was. And I had to go back and figure out, a business plan for this nonprofit and figure out how we were going to survive and bring in the right people, the right team to help. It's not something you can do alone. I wouldn't suggest that anybody try that. It was, you know, I could have saved myself a lot of unnecessary struggle if I had thought it through beforehand.
But I think, as you're suggesting, and again, from just speaking to a number of people over a number of years, I mean, sometimes there's a need that you see that's urgent or just so upsetting that you just act on it, and then you look up one day and it's like, oh my God, I think I just started a sanctuary. And
yeah, exactly.
And then like you say, then you have to sort of, you know, react to that and figure out along the way how to sustain it and how to maybe go back a little bit and, as you say, come up with a, you know, business plan and a model that's going to sustain it. But, the people that do this, just like obviously you fit this profile, are just people who are so concerned about the plight of animals and have had a long history from childhood, as you did, looking after them and rescuing them, that they just act. They're compelled to act. And then sorting out the details sometimes does have to come a little bit later, but it obviously has to come to sustain and keep those animals fed and well looked after. So
yeah.
So luckily, we have another one of our other texters says, Duncan, your guest is awesome. I'm so embarrassed with people of Tampa, obviously referring to her a couple earlier callers. Right now, please tell her she's doing a great job, and that's from Marshall. So I couldn't agree more, Marshall. Thank you. So, yeah, well, I'm going to mention this, too. This lady seems to have a deep understanding of the universal life force. I would have thought that MNF listeners were a bit more open-minded, and the rude comments are unsettling. I agree, Dave. Thank you for your comments as well. So, anyways, let's hope we hear more of those kinds of folks. So one of the many things, too, that I'm really struck by, Indra, is the children's educational program. So let's talk a little bit about those. Before we get into the specifics of those programs, tell me about the rationale for first beginning to offer them. I mean, when did you introduce them in your tenure there?
It's a good question. You know, in the beginning, as I alluded to a little bit, I sort of envisioned just me with a bunch of animals and not really having a lot of other humans involved or around. And what started happening, Duncan, very early on is that children started appearing anyways. You know, you've got animals, you've got kids showing up.
Yeah.
And I noticed that a lot of the animals that were suffering the most responded very well to children and seemed to heal more quickly. And then I started noticing that children who, you know, had their own problems, whether they be emotional problems or whether they be, you know, challenges and special needs that they have, they were doing much better with the animals. Their parents would start saying to me, you know, ever since so-and-so started coming around, they're more confident or they're doing better in school or what have you. So I saw this connection happening. And then when it really kicked into, so then we started saying, okay, you know, school groups are calling us and asking, can they come? So, you know, we started bringing them in and showing them around and having them introducing them to the animals and doing a little bit of education with them around who the animals are and, you know, what their needs are and how they kind of fit into the world around us. And then one day, Duncan, it kicked into high gear. It was a couple of years ago. It was the day after the Sandy Hook tragedy.
Mm.
And we had a group of eighth graders that were scheduled to come with their teacher that Saturday morning. So we decided that we were going to start the day. It was a dark, cloudy day. It looked like it was going to rain. And we decided we were going to start the visit with the kids with a moment of silence. And so that's what we did. And just as we all stood in the circle silently, the clouds parted and the sun came through and it shone on these heads of these beautiful children standing in a circle. And I asked them, what does what we're doing here today, you know, at this sanctuary, have to do with what happened yesterday? And these kids, they were so wise and they were so compassionate. You know, one of them said, you know, if we notice someone suffering, you know, we should reach out and help them before it gets to a point like that. And another one said, you know, maybe if someone like that had the experience of being around a bunch of animals who were really nice to them, you know, maybe they would have been different. And another one said, you know, because being kind to animals helps us be kinder to other humans.
Mm.
And so these, you know, these kids were coming out with these brilliant pearls of wisdom that were so deep and so powerful. And I thought, this place has, you know, this sanctuary has grown much larger. You know, it's taken on a life of its own, and we have to do this. We have to connect humans, and especially children, with the animals. And, you know, and let that magic happen. So today, you know, fast forward to the present, we
yeah.
have all kinds of environmental science education programs. One of the most popular programs is called My Place in the Ecosystem, where we do a nature walk and we meet the sanctuary animals and a science teacher talks to the kids about the ecosystem and, you know, and about how we can participate and help to protect the environment. We have other programs we're just planning to start a whole bunch of art programs where we encourage children to come here and learn to draw and paint and sculpt and, you know, use the animals and nature as their inspiration. So, you know, science and art and always involving animals. And we really just have a lot of fun with it.
And that's great. And what is the age range of the school kids that come at this point?
To be honest with you, it's the full range. And we've had groups of preschoolers come here, and we have graduate students come here, and everybody in between. We actually have a class that we offer here once a year through Marywood University's School of Architecture. It's called Farmatecture. And the kids actually, architecture students, actually come here with their professors, and they design and build eco-friendly housing for the animals. So literally, just every age range. And we've gotten really creative in just looking for new ways to connect people with animals and nature.
Well, it does seem like that, regardless of the age, that seems to be kind of a key element, is encouraging those students to make those connections between their life, what's going on with them, the animals that they're visiting in Interloca, and the environment or ecosystem, which is a fantastic link to draw, especially for younger kids, and just to really make that recognition early on and see it going forward.
Absolutely. I think, you know, kindness and compassion are underrated in our society. And, you know, it comes naturally. It comes naturally to all of us, but, you know, even more naturally to children. So I think if we encourage that and help them think about the world, you know, from a base of kindness and compassion, whether you're learning science, whether you're learning art, whether you're learning math, whether you're just doing whatever you do in the world, thinking about participating in a way that is, you know, that is more gentle, could really make the world a better place.
For sure. Well, just let me let folks know, again, we're just in our final moments, but I'm speaking with Indra Lahiri, founder of Interloca Animal Sanctuary. To join the conversation, please call 813-239-9663. Email dj@wmnf.org or text 813-433-0885. So, Indra, can you mention an example or two of especially maybe the younger kids that come there, an experience or encounter, whatever, that appeared to really profoundly affect one or two of these kids in some way?
Absolutely. There is a young woman who has been coming to the sanctuary for years as part of her school's ecology club. She started coming when she was, I'm going to guess maybe 12 years old. And she is a she has some special needs with regard to her learning style. And so she has a couple of classes that she's in what they call mainstream, and a couple of classes that are geared specifically to help her be able to learn with her needs. And she's very shy and lacks a lot of she used to be very shy and lacked a lot of confidence and was really struggling in school, both socially and academically. And so she started coming to the sanctuary and spending time with the animals. And pretty soon she knew them very well. And she was leading other kids around and introducing them to the animals and helping the teachers kind of talk about what was happening there. And one day the teacher said to me, you know, this young woman in school had actually, you know, been given an assignment. Everybody had been given an assignment to do a debate, and she actually volunteered to go first, which was a huge step in terms of her confidence in herself. I've watched her over the years just blossom and grow into this very confident, strong, smart young woman who no longer thinks of herself as being, you know, weird or different or, you know, she's proud of who she is, and she's a wonderful, wonderful person.
Once again, it's as you said really early in our conversation here, the sort of reciprocal, you know, healing power of animals. I mean, those animals are there chiefly, at least, because they went through some horrible situation and need to heal, but they're obviously healing you and the woman you just described and others in the other direction in no small measure.
Absolutely.
Here's another, after being extremely embarrassed and humiliated by some of our calls and emails, people do seem to be rallying, and this one says, I'm so moved by your guest today, truly lives the meaning of sanctuary. Is the sanctuary open to the public every day? I wish there were more people like Indra on the earth. Thank you.
Oh, well, that's very kind. The sanctuary is open to the public, not every day. You know, it is the animal's home, and we need to be mindful of that at all times. We are here for them. They are not here for us. But they do like to have visitors. So we actually have on our website a page called Visit with a calendar on it. You can book yourself an appointment. You'll see the available times that are there on the calendar. The other thing that you can do is look on the website for events. We have monthly events. This month, the event is pig pampering. So lots of great opportunities to get involved and you know, and connect with the animals, and we usually also have a wonderful picnic lunch and just, you know, make a good time of it.
If I heard you correctly, the phrase was pig pampering?
Pig pampering, yes. And
okay.
That's just sheep snuggling.
All right. Well, I love alliteration at least as much as the next guy, so, but I must specifically ask about pig pampering. What happens in the midst of a pig pampering experience?
Well, Duncan, pig pampering is so popular that we actually, this is our second one. The first one sold out within a couple of days, so we had to schedule another one. And literally, we just, we go around the property. You get to visit with all the animals, but we spend more time with the various pigs in their pastures. And there's a senior volunteer or staff member in each pasture. People are divided into small groups, and they go in there and, you know, give the pigs belly rubs, give them baths. You know, if their wallows need to be dug out a little bit, they dig out the wallows a little bit. They'll, you know, do any little bit of work that needs to be done in the pasture, but mostly it's, you know, with the animals. They love getting baths. They love getting belly rubs. They love just having attention and hanging out.
Well, I'm going to get in on that pig pampering at some point. I just know I can't resist. But
you have to meet Duncan the pig.
Well, okay. I wasn't going to bring it up, but now that people listening have heard this, yes, I am enchanted by the fact that there is a pig at Interloca Animal Sanctuary named Duncan. So I look forward to meeting Duncan at some point
He's
as well.
A fantastic person. You're going
to
love him.
Oh, cool. Well, I hope to model my behavior after Duncan then and become a better person. And with maybe I need some pig pampering. But just in the last minute or two, Andrew, but one of the things I wanted to also speak with you before we finish here is that over the years I've been doing this show and really closely watching the animal scene, animal rights leaders, people running sanctuaries, those seeking to affect change in legislation, so on. I've really been struck by the growing number of folks doing that kind of work and other related work who have advanced degrees, and you're very much part of that important trend. You hold a PhD. What field is your PhD in?
That's a good question, Duncan. I actually began working on a doctorate in anthropology years ago and never finished it. I'm all but dissertation. So what I did was I got another degree in organizational psychology because I needed it at the time for the consulting work that I was doing.
Mm-hmm.
I use the anthropology that I learned much more in my work today, you know, than the organizational psychology. But I just love learning, so it was wonderful that I had the opportunity to do that.
And as part of your, in addition to looking after all the animals, you do consult and coach outside of the work at Interloca, correct?
You know, I don't do as much of that as I used to.
Oh, okay.
The sanctuary has grown so much. So, you know, occasionally I might be able to fit a project in, but a lot of the coaching and consulting that I do now is with other sanctuaries that are sort of new and getting started and helping them to figure out how they can be sustainable.
I see. Cool. All right. So we should let people know, not only for scheduling pig pampering and just generally finding out more, that the website is Indraloka, IndraLoka.org. And we've been speaking with Indra Lahiri from Interloca Animal Sanctuary. Indra, thank you so much for making the time to join us, and again, I apologize for some of the fairly awful things that got asked or said along the way, but anyway, I think most of the people listening by our emails and texts and other things really appreciated your message and the work that you're doing, and as do I, so thank you very much.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
All right, it's time to step into the Talking Animals Comedy Corner, featuring perhaps inexplicably a comic never featured on the show, Pete Holmes, who's also a writer, actor, podcaster, and for two seasons hosted his own TV show on TBS right after Conan. This is Pete Holmes with part of a piece called Dropped a Dog on Talking Animals.
I recently dropped a dog. Oh, that's okay. Hear the empathy noise. I didn't wound a dog. I'd be crazy if I was like, okay, show's going pretty good. What next? I killed a dog. You know those things everyone loves? I ended one. I wouldn't tell you guys if I did that. I would save that for my serial killer journal. Just like, could man be so sweet? Is that just me? That's the craziest thing about serial killers, is the journaling. I understand killing some people, but who wants to go home like, big day? Take it easy, Doogie Howser. He killed a lot of people today. Take it easy. So I dropped a dog. I didn't know you can't. Did you know? Maybe there's one person I'm helping. You can't drop dogs. If you want to put a dog down, they're like little old people. They need help. They have arthritis and joints. They're like, be gentle. You gotta be gentle. If you want to put a dog down, you have to kneel as if before a king and lay it down. If there's mud, put your jacket down. They need our help. I was raised with cats. You can bowl a cat. Do you understand? You can't hurt a cat. They're infallible. They're like the Pope or a Pharaoh. You can't hurt a cat. You can pick up a cat any way you want. You can grab a cat by the fat behind its neck. It'll yield to that move from its youth, straight up with that look on its face like, this is degrading us both. I'm 6'6". That's like a kitty cat skyscraper. I'll go as high as I want, give it a little bend to the knee, a hoist into the air. Cat's cool, baby. He's unfazed. He doesn't even blink. Do cats blink? He doesn't even blink. They'll just do 13 kitty cat somersaults, smoke a tiny cat cigarette, land on all fours, be like, self, I'm a cat. He'll disappear into a nearby shrub. You won't see him for 2 months. He'll be fine. He'll forge for himself. He'll come back on a rainy Thursday covered in lo mein, just like, I've returned. Not because I like you, but because I choose to come back. That's how I like my love, from women and from cats. I like to earn it. I like to earn it. When a cat meets you, he's like, die. Then you work up to that purr means something. People are like, my dog loves me. I'm like, yeah, but your dog would also love a bag of sticks with your t-shirt on it. You know what I mean?
That was Pete Holmes with part of a piece called Drop the Dog, taken from his album Nice Try, The Devil. Coming up at 11 on WNF, it's Rob Loy and Radioactivity, now rolling into the noon hour. It constitutes a full 2 hours of interviews, phone calls, news, and more. Meanwhile, as the prize for Name That Animal Tune, we'll be offering a copy of the acclaimed documentary Cowspiracy. Right now, it's time for animal news and announcements. There's certainly a lot of stuff that's been going on lately. We'll try to hit at least a few of them in the time that we have allotted. One of those that I think at least ties into some extent to some of the conversation we were having with Indra a moment ago. Just read this. Is from the Associated Press. A federal judge ruled Monday that Idaho's law banning secret filming of animal abuse at agricultural facilities is unconstitutional, giving animal rights activists across the country hope that the decision will pave the way to overturn similar laws in other states. U.S. Judge B. Lynn Windmill found that the law violates the First Amendment. Quote, audio and visual evidence is uniquely persuasive means of conveying a message, and it can vindicate an undercover investigator or whistleblower who is otherwise disbelieved or ignored. Windmill wrote in his 29-page ruling, prohibiting undercover investigators or whistleblowers from recording an agricultural facility's operations inevitably suppresses a key type of speech because it limits the information that might later be published or broadcast. So, yay, Judge B. Lynn Windmill. Excellent ruling, and I think other things are likely to perhaps follow suit. And, of course, we can't talk today without at least briefly addressing Cecil or Cecil-related news. So taking this from the LA Times, following a huge public outcry over the killing of a beloved lion by a trophy hunter, Delta Airlines announced Monday that it would no longer ship animal trophies, the latest of several carriers to end the service. Delta, the only U.S.-based carrier with non-stop service to South Africa, declined to elaborate on why it had made the decision and how often it ships animal trophies. It would say only that effective immediately, the airline will ban shipment of all lion, leopard, elephant, rhinoceros, and buffalo trophies worldwide as freight. And I think others have even since followed suit, and still more hopefully will do so. Also on the Cecil-related front, this is as recent as today, at least in Zimbabwe. A professional hunter who helped an American kill a popular lion named Cecil in an alleged illegal hunt in Zimbabwe said Wednesday that the case against him is quote-unquote frivolous. Wearing sunglasses and a camouflage cap and jacket, Theo Bronkhorst appeared in a court in Hoyingtown where he faces charges of failing to prevent an unlawful hunt. If convicted, he faces up to 15 years in prison. Givemore Muvengri, Bronkhorst's lawyer, asked for a trial to be postponed to September 20th so he can prepare the case. The prosecution did not object, and Magistrate Linwe Maposa approved the postponement in a court session that lasted only a few moments. I think it's frivolous, and I think it's wrong, Bronkhorst told journalists when asked about the charges against him. He said he believed he had not done anything illegal. Bronkhorst said hunting is, quote, an integral part of our country, and it's got to continue. If we do not use wildlife sustainably, there will be no wildlife. Okay. Closer to home here, despite a legal channel, state wildlife authorities began selling licenses today. This is as of Monday, for the first bear hunt in Florida in more than two decades. A license, $100 for a Florida resident and $300 for a non-resident, allows a hunter to kill one bear. About 600 people bought a permit Monday, with most buying the license online, said Tammy Sapp, communications manager for the State Fish and Wildlife Conservation Commission. Division of Hunting and Game Management. All but six were bought by Florida residents. The state will continue to sell permits through Friday, October 23rd, the day before the hunt starts. The state is selling an unlimited number of bear permits, but only a few hunters will bag a bear. State officials will allow the killing of as many as 320 bears, including up to 100 in Central Florida, but promise to shut down the hunt if the kill limit is reached before October 30th, the end of the bear season. All right, that might do it. Might have to do it for today's edition of Animal News and Announcements. I'm Duncan Strauss. You're listening to Talking Animals, where the show website is talkinganimals.net. It's time to proceed to Name That Animal Tune. This is a giveaway, but please only participate if you haven't won something from WMNF in the last 90 days. And there will be a prize, a copy of the acclaimed documentary Cowspiracy. The first person who calls 813-239-9663 and correctly identifies this animal song, pertinent to both our conversation with Indra and a band playing in town next week. It's Name That Animal Tune on Talking Animals.
In the corner of my eye, I saw you and Rudy's. You were very high. You were high. It was a crime.
We have just about reached the end of today's edition of Talking Animals on WMNF Tampa. Rob Lohr is up next with what amounts to 2 hours of radioactivity. I'll be back next Wednesday, August 12th, with another edition. I hope you'll join me then. Also, visit our website, talkinganimals.net, where we make available all sorts of information, as well as archives and podcasts, past Talking Animals programs. We also have a link to the Talking Animals Facebook page, our Twitter feed, and more. Please like us on Facebook, the show, and or me personally, and follow us on Twitter. You can also subscribe to our newsletter to find out about our guests a couple of days beforehand and other news from the Talking Animals world. That's all found at talkinganimals.net. All right, we got a few folks that probably can name that tune. Hi, you're on Talking Animals. You're live on the air. Can you name that animal tune?
Black Cow, Steely Dan.
Exactly. You are correct, sir. What is your first name?
John. J-O-N.
J-O-N, John. Cool. All right, we'll send you off a copy of Cowspiracy. Please stay on hold. We'll get your information to get that to you. Congratulations. Thanks for listening.
Thank you,
Duncan. All right, it was Black Cow. Steely Dan is playing in town on Tuesday with Elvis Costello, the Mid-Florida Amphitheater. Forward to that. So I'm Duncan Strauss. Thanks very much for listening. Have a good week. Be kind to animals. Be kind to others. Be kind to yourself. We're closing out today's show with an animal song. Another nod. Farm animals in Indraloka Animal Sanctuary, in a sense. This is Corb Lund with Cows Around on WMNF. Tampa, Brandon, Clearwater, Largo, Weeki Watch, and Beyond Community Conscious Radio. Thanks for listening. Speak with you again next Wednesday at 10 a.m. on Talking Animals. Thanks.
Everything is better with some cows around. Living in town sometimes brings me down. Let me bestow this western blessing and share what I have found. May you always have cows around. What else you gonna spend that extra money on? What else is gonna get you up hours before dawn? What else is gonna keep you toiling on and on and on? May you always have cows around. Come on, you know that you got too much time on your hands. Not merely enough complication in your plans. You need to invite all of the frustration that you can. May you always have cows around. Everything is better with some cows around. Living in town sometimes brings me down. Let me bestow this western blessing and leave you saddle bound. But you always have cows around. What else could make the bishop swear like a sailor might? What else can cause such tension between a man and his wife? What else could ever bring all these enhancements to your life? May you always have cows around. What else is gonna get out when you don't close the gate? What else will make you prematurely show your age? What else will take a run at you in a fit of bovine rage? May you always have cows around. But everything is better with some cows around. Living in town sometimes brings me down. And although this western blessing leaves you cattle bound, may you always have cows around. Well, there's Hereford, Highland, Simmental, Welsh, Black, and Maine, and Juki, and Ina, Limousine, Shorthorn, Charley, Watu.